when asked if I have a plan or anything like that, a one-year plan, a five-year plan, I've never had that. And it's because I think so many different opportunities can come your way, especially in this space. I have no idea what I'll be doing a month from now in many ways. And so that's why I like this, is because it is different every day.
Hello and welcome to episode 103 of the Matt Happy Podcast. This is Phineas. Today, I'm excited to introduce a conversation Mason had with Nick DiGiovanni. Nick is many things, including celebrity chef, internet personality, entertainer, cookbook author, multi-talented YouTube personality, and much more. The two dig into a side of mental health that we haven't talked about a lot on the show, food, the role it plays in our mental health, the role it's played in Nick's life. The two cover a lot. So without further ado, the Matt Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the show with Mason and Nick DiGiovanni.
What was your childhood sort of like family life, siblings, like anything? I know.
Yeah. Three younger brothers, which is fun for growing up, yeah, to have four boys.
What's the age gaps?
We're pretty much straight down.
It's like bop, bop,
boom,
bop,
boom,
bop,
boom, boom, boom. Yeah, which is great.
Yeah,
you can play any sport. Oldest pairs with the youngest, and then the two middle ones. It was awesome.
Did you guys all go to the same schools growing up?
Yeah. We went, most of our education was in public schools in Rhode Island, and then we migrated towards Massachusetts as we got older for school, and then everyone spread out for college.
Yeah. So, what was it like being the oldest of four? Like, did you feel sort of pressure to sort of set an example, or were like the stakes higher for you, or like how did you sort of navigate that as a kid?
I like being the oldest. I mean, you learn lots and lots of lessons.
Yeah.
And my dad was also the oldest, so then that was a different sort of that was a different dynamic too than if he had been the youngest and he was trying to sort of guide me as being the oldest.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of good lessons there, I think, too.
He bestowed his eldest child knowledge onto you?
In part that, but also in part, you know, I feel like he was a bit harder on me because he'd already seen some of the stuff that had happened and kind of had gone through those lessons. So it was a unique dynamic in that sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's like pretty common. I know, at least for me, I have like four siblings from three different sets of parents. So I went from literally being like an only child at one point. Then I was the oldest of three. Then I became the middle of five.
Yeah.
So I sort of like experience all the different dynamics. But I feel like as they get like younger and younger, the parents start to take it like easy and easier and easier.
Oh, without a question.
Yeah. It's like your youngest brother was probably,
he could do whatever he wanted.
Shit. Yeah. That like you would have gotten destroyed for.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was crazy.
And when did food really come into the picture?
Food was just early on, but it was more of a side project at the start, in the sense of, I didn't look at it as my main thing until college, when I just was looking at everyone else picking what they wanted to do. And then food was the thing for me that kept coming back.
So it was kind of just like, you know, before college, like more just like an extracurricular like hobby type thing.
Sure. Yeah. I would watch my grandparents cook, my great grandparents. I was lucky. I had two of my great grandmothers alive.
Wow.
So they were about 100 each. And so I got to see them.
Where were they from? Like, oh, what's their ethnicity?
Italian and German. So kind of random.
My girlfriend is Italian also. So her grandma, I imagine, was making a similar things to your great grandma.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to see that, which was really nice. And then I think I just saw so much food around me growing up that I started taking notes, mental notes and actual notes. Mm-hmm. I wrote down little recipes and cookbook type stuff when I was pretty young, and then it just blossomed into something that I wanted to pick long term once in college. I couldn't pick anything else. It just was the thing that made sense.
Do you think like before that it didn't seem like something that could be a real like career or like something that you could actually do?
Yeah, definitely. Because the only path before was really going into restaurants.
Yeah.
As a chef.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's for what I could see. Because I didn't, you know, you could go into making packaged foods, CPG type stuff. But when it comes to gourmet, nice kind of food, at that time, the only thing was restaurants. I mean, there's nothing else.
Yeah.
So that was the only path that I could see that was going to be something that would make sense. And it was something that maybe I wanted to do down the road, but I wasn't so sure. And I didn't think I wanted to be a cook in a restaurant every night because I saw things about that that I didn't like so much. You know, it's harder to do a lot of stuff that you want to do. You're working when everyone else is is playing for a lot of the time, which is tough. I mean, I love going and checking out restaurants. I worked in a number of them to try to learn as much as I could. But there were parts of it that I just saw that I said, you know, like starting a family, some of that can lead to huge challenges with that. And that was one of those big things where I just looked at it and I said, I can't do it if that's going to be a big problem.
Yeah.
You know?
I think like it's so admirable to be able to sort of discover what you want to do at like such a young age still. I'm curious like what that process was like for you of like, you know, being all in, or how do you know like that this is what you want to do? Like, were there any sort of fears that you had, any like anxieties that you had towards knowing if it was the right decision or not? I know that like I read how you kind of like invented your own major or something. Obviously, like you were doing things that hadn't really been done before. Like, what was sort of navigating that like to really commit?
I mean, I had some sort of inherent fearlessness for one reason or another. I tried to toy around with different things, but I think one of the great things about a lot of the different career paths you can look at is they sometimes steer the way for you. And I mean that in the sense of, you know, if you want to try to become a doctor, if you're not meant to be a doctor, then it's really hard. It's
painful. You probably won't get there. Yeah.
It's painful for a reason, right? Yeah. Which is good, which is, I think, a really good thing. So, you know, at one point I said, hey, that could be really cool. I might want to look into that. And I tried it, and the classes were really, really difficult, and it just didn't seem like it was the right fit because I didn't want it bad enough. And it just, it decided for me that I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff like that I think is good that's built into school and education that helped steer me in that right direction. And then, like I said, food just kept coming back and resurfacing as the thing that I wanted to focus on. And then I did.
Yeah, like it almost kind of upicked you in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah. Because, you know, sometimes you sort of feel like you got to pick one of those classic routes, and then I just couldn't pick a classic route.
Yeah. No, I could definitely relate. I mean, like, people ask me a lot of the times how I ended up in fashion, or, like, was I always obsessed with fashion as a kid? And, like, the answer is really no. It was sort of just, like, I was creative and I wanted to express myself, and fashion was just kind of like the most accessible outlet that sort of found me in a way. And then it sort of just, you know, that was the best way to get these ideas out or express myself in that way. So I feel like that's honestly a nice way to think about it. I think the most important thing is really just like the effort of like trying. I feel like as long as you kind of are determined and ambitious to like figure it out for people out there, like, then, like you said, like, most often out of the times, like, it'll like kind of find you, or like it'll fall into place how it's meant to.
Totally. Yeah.
I know you went to Harvard, obviously, and then I was looking into like Milton also. It seemed like a very prestigious school. Yeah. I texted my girlfriend and her sister. I was like, is Milton a good school? They're like, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good school.
Were you always very focused like academically growing up?
No, I wasn't very good, actually. Yeah. I think in high school, maybe my first or second year, was when I realized I had to get my life together. And I started suddenly doing well in school. It was a really weird inflection point. What was it that
sort of made you like shift?
I don't know why it happened, to be totally honest with you. I mean, I'm sure it was a combination of different things, but there was definitely a moment of reckoning somewhere for me. I know at the time my parents were being super hard on me about it, and pretty much being, you know, saying that it was up to me to figure this out, and if I didn't, then good luck. And so I think there was just an inflection point where I just, you know, something clicked, and then suddenly I started focusing in school. I started working harder. I actually cared about all this stuff, and then I ended up liking it. So it was a really nice, switch that flipped. I just couldn't totally tell you how it happened. That there was just a moment in time, I think, where I just sort of matured a bit more. I grew up, and then I realized, like, you know, it was my life. No one else was gonna pave the way for me for it, and I had to figure it out. And then I started just caring about all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to apply yourself and then get to see the like consequence on the other end of actually enjoying it. I was like, I, you know, had a different sort of path of like ended up dropping out of college after my first year, like always really struggled academically in school. Like I was telling you, and like, you know, my way of sort of figuring it out was like just trial by error almost, of like really being able to express to my parents like, hey, I college doesn't feel right for me. Like, I know you're talking about like the traditional path or whatever of like me being a freshman looking at juniors and seniors and just like not knowing what I wanted to do or not knowing like where I fit in. And I feel like what's so amazing about like the world we live in now is like there's so many things that you can do after high school, and like all of them are like you can land a great job, you can go to college still, like, you know, I feel like a degree has never really mattered less, like not to downplay having a degree, but like it's not the only path that you have to take. And now we're seeing, you know, kids learn in so many different ways. There's so many more opportunities with like the internet and social media and like Web3 and all these things that like, it's like such a good time to like be able to explore and like see what you want to do.
Yeah, definitely. It just came, it comes down to the idea that I just didn't care. And it could be because, you know, food was the thing that I always wanted to focus on. And
yeah,
why would I want to sit in a science class and be learning? I mean, not that you shouldn't learn about some of this stuff, but
yeah,
why would I want to be sitting in this really difficult class that, you know, when in the back of my mind, I just want to be learning so much more in a kitchen, especially given that even where I am now with having learned so much about food, there's a billion things that I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to learn at all.
Yeah.
So why would I want to be focusing on that?
Yeah.
You know, maybe that was something that was deep inside where I just, you know, but whatever it was, I just sort of, I hit an inflection point where I started focusing way more on the things that I think I liked, and then just it helped with everything else.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting to think about, like, if any part of you, it's maybe like you always wanted to do food, but let's say like you didn't really know it or something, and it's like you almost didn't even care, like you said, if the shit didn't work out, because like food was in the back pocket.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's probably what I focused on when I went home at night.
You know,
I would cook dinner for everyone, and then in the morning I would make really creative whatever breakfast.
Yeah.
Maybe super unique creative pancakes.
Yeah.
Just all that stuff. And then go to school. And that was that main chunk of my day was the monotonous, boring part of the day.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Was it hard to like vocalize that, do you think? Like, were you feeling any like insecurities about it? I'm just thinking like as like a man growing up, or like to say like I want to do food, or like
yeah,
something like that, if it doesn't seem as traditional, that it might cause like some insecurities.
I'm sure there's no question that I probably got made fun of a few times for,
yeah,
you know, wanting to cook and that kind of stuff. I do think it's changed a lot now. I think it's changed 100%. A lot now. And but without a question, I'm sure there were kids that would sort of laugh and make fun of the idea that I wanted to just cook and be in the kitchen. Because
like, it's just not a job, or you're like a...
I mean, the reality is when I was younger, like, it just wasn't as... It wasn't as widely accepted of a career for you know... for a guy to want to go in and do.
Yeah.
And now I totally think it is, which is great.
100%.
But,
were there any like mentors or like idols in the space that like you were looking up at as a kid?
Honestly, the mentors or idols would have just been family at that time.
Yeah.
Who were, you know, probably my grandmother and my great grandmother.
Yeah.
Whether there were people that made jokes about it or made fun of it or not, it evidently wasn't enough to deter me. I'm sure I still
just,
it's funny because it flips over into this thing where everybody wants to sort of learn how to at least cook the basics. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think there's anyone out there that I've ever met that doesn't want
survival,
to learn how to cook,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everybody has to learn to fend for themselves once they finish college and have to go live in a, you know, their first apartment.
Who's laughing now?
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
What was your favorite thing growing up that your great-grandmothers and grandmothers cooked?
My great-grandmother made really good, she made more really classic grandma comfort foods. I mean, she was like this old, tiny, tiny, tiny little
mm-hmm.
Little lady who made, she made really good applesauce, I remember.
Mm.
And it seems like such a random thing, but she would take whole really nice apples and kind of press them through and press them down and sit them in the fridge with some cinnamon and a little honey and really good applesauce.
Like, as a fucking little boy, that's like the best shit in the world.
It was
amazing.
And I couldn't even comprehend how she was making that stuff.
Yeah.
Because compared to the little containers of Mott's applesauce, it was just night and day.
Yeah.
So that was really great. And then on the other side, my grandmother was amazing. I mean, she could crank out a 6 or 7 course meal for 25, 30 people as like it was nothing.
Yeah. Just
and that
like
was
in
cool
her sleep. Yeah. Just like a casually.
That was amazing to see.
Yeah.
Just watching that from the other side was fun to be around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's special. So when was the moment in college where you were really like, all right, let's fucking do this. Like, I'm all in.
Well, Harvard is really strict about giving out these special concentrations, these special majors. Uh-huh. And so I think they have 49 concentrations, and then they have this last one that you can create your own. And that's the one I kept opting for, but they rejected my proposal the first time around because I think there's only 5 or 6 kids in the whole school that usually have one.
Wow.
And that's out of, I don't know, 1,800 per grade or something.
Yeah.
So it's not common. And is that like it.
you have to apply for that basically, yeah, and like say why, like, I think this is worthy of one of them essentially?
Yeah, you have to get a bunch of professors to vouch for you that it's going to be legitimate enough.
It's a whole process.
Rigorous enough. Yeah. You have to have all these professors. You got to write tons of letters. You got to provide a whole course proposal, all this stuff. So they rejected it. And I was just super torn up when they rejected it because I'd spent so much time. Everything was riding on it. And then I just sort of had this really lame fallback plan. I had to pick a random major that I didn't care about at all.
Yeah.
And then I reapplied and then it went through. Mm. And then, so that's the moment where I said, okay, if they're going to back it, then I can definitely do this path.
Yeah.
Right.
And how did you sort of think about what you wanted it to be, or like how you framed it, or like when you thought about like what I actually want to study, or like how it's going to work? Like, how did you convince them to?
Well, of those traditional classes that I was taking, there was one biology class that I took that I remember we had a tiny little section one day on just sustainability and environmental science, and mm-hmm, I loved it. I was mm-hmm super captivated during that class and I liked it. So I figured combine that with the restaurant food side of things, which food mm-hmm is very high up there in terms of, you know, emissions and mm-hmm things that are destroying mm-hmm the climate, very heavily tied to food.
Totally.
So I figured this is perfect. Let me just tie these two things together. It will be academically rigorous enough that hopefully they'll accept it. I like both of these topics and it worked out.
I'm wondering about your like first sort of mental health experience, or like when you became conscious of your own mental health. I know you talked about getting that rejected for the first time was like super crushing, or that at the beginning of high school, kind of, you know, figuring out your mindset. Like, when do you feel like you were really aware of your mental health as like a thing that had an effect on you?
When I think mental health really came into play for me, and when I started focusing more on it and mm-hmm just my life in general, was probably when I started out after college trying to pursue just social media and cooking and this stuff full time. Yeah, because it's a really, I mean, every job is stressful in all its different own ways. And of course, this comes with many stressors that I just had to get, you know, acclimated to and learn to deal with.
Yeah.
And so it was probably not until after college when I started to focus on that mm-hmm and just realized that there were all these different things going on and that I had to be, you know, just so careful and thoughtful about everything that I'm doing. And yeah, I don't know, there's just something that's certainly very unhealthy about social media. I have no, mm-hmm, I have none of those apps on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't use Instagram. I don't use TikTok. I don't use YouTube. I'll go on once in a while to familiarize myself a little bit and just get caught up
mm-hmm
with the trends and that kind of stuff. But truthfully, that's been my way to focus on mental health, is just not mm have those apps.
Yeah. And is that because you had them before and sort of didn't like the way that it was affecting you, or you've just chose to kind of stay away in general?
They're just addicting, and to a certain extent, you know, they can, for a lot of people, they cannot be healthy if you're on them too much. And I had enough, I guess, self-control to realize that if I had some of those things, I would be sitting on my phone until 1:30 or 2 in the morning and looking at this stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, you know, obviously I use them for my for my living.
100%.
They have great things about them. I'm very open about the fact that I don't have them on my phone
mm-hmm
because I'd rather spend the time, you know, focusing on creating fun ideas for them, which is kind of ironic in a way.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, first off, respect. Second off, I think that it mainly makes me think of just like self-awareness and like being secure as a person. You know, I feel like when social media gets toxic and negative for me, it's like, am I judging other people? Am I comparing my life to other people? Am I like, you know, what is it about me that like this is sort of like either distracting or making me feel worse? I feel like the times that I feel most secure in who I am and like my value and my worth, it's like, all right, this doesn't have that much power over me, right? Like, I can kind of control myself. And I feel like that's kind of definitely how like mental health is really a part of everything. Is like, it really starts with ourselves and how we're feeling and how much we love ourselves or how comfortable we are in our own skin. And then when we step out into the world, either, you know, actually in real life or on our phones, it's like then we're exposing ourselves to like the opportunity to get like, you know, how strong is your armor and like how self-aware or vulnerable can you be? And like, you know, sadly, there's not really a lot of mental health training in that way, where then we all sort of like hop online and it's all just like comparison or negative energy or things like that. And I can imagine, especially with like a platform like yours, obviously, that like, you know, that's not something that you really want to get sucked into.
Yeah, definitely. I try also, I'm making food videos, so mm-hmm. it's not too polarizing most mm-hmm. of the time. I mean, pineapple pizza is about as crazy as it can get for me, right? That's the most controversial thing I can do.
Yeah.
So that's a nice thing about it all. And I'm...
Yeah, that's interesting too. Yeah.
I never got rid of them because of any sort of hate or any of that kind of yeah. stuff, which kind of, I would certainly hope that I'm not getting because I'm making, you know, pizza and that kind of stuff and making yeah. food videos to try to make people happy. And
yeah.
You give them a recipe. So it's not about that, which is I think nice. It's just, it just helps to not have, you know, something that you always have to check. Or it was a good thing that I did it about a year and a half ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes things a lot easier. People think it's crazy, but I go to check Instagram on my laptop. That's how I go on Instagram. If I'm right. replying to people's DMs, it's usually on my computer, which is funny.
It's very businesslike.
Yeah. Like a long email message.
Was there sort of like a learning curve for you to really get comfortable like with yourself as an internet personality in front of the camera, like anything that sort of came up there that was hard for you to sort of navigate or figure out? Or was that just always natural as well?
Well, I'm definitely pretty shy.
Yeah.
Just generally, that's just how I have always been. So that was and still is something to get used to for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't. The reality of it all is, of course, if I'm doing my job correctly, then more and more people are going to come up and say hi to me on the street and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And that's just something that you evidently have to get used to.
Yeah.
But for me, it certainly has taken some getting used to.
Yeah.
And it's definitely hard. And people are always like, well, don't you love that? Isn't that so cool? And I think sometimes they don't believe you when you say no, because they're like, come on, it must be really great. But for me, I think it's especially because I am shy. You know, if I always say, if I had to make the choice of nobody really, you know, saying hi to you or it happens all the time, then this is not because I don't want to meet people and say hi, but I would just rather, like, you would rather have
pick
your,
nobody.
Have
yeah,
your
let
privacy.
Me, let me go about my business.
Yeah, you'd rather have your privacy. And it's just the truth. I think that most people would answer that once they got a taste of it.
Yeah.
I think most people would answer that way.
Do you feel famous?
Not really. I mean, yeah. Famous is, of course, a relative word, right?
Absolutely.
I feel like I've begun to establish a name for myself in the food space,
mm-hmm.
definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out the best way to do that. But I definitely wouldn't use the word famous, no.
Yeah. No. People come up to you on the street. I think it's interesting because, like, you know, with a lot of people in the social media space, it's like they have millions of followers and there's all these people, but then there's also just like so many people who have like no idea who they are, like
sure,
I've never
exactly.
heard of them, like all those kinds of things. And I just think yeah. it's always like such a funny like duality of like, yeah, like you're also very famous and like no one knows who you are at the same time, and like
right.
what that could do like mentally if you don't have that like
definitely.
Security in yourself is just like a mind fuck.
Yeah, I think I look at famous as a household name type deal where
yeah.
you can go anywhere and any place and people are going to know. And you know, I'm just trying to really capture the especially the food space and just,
yeah.
you know, hopefully be one of those go-to people when people have a question about food or when people
yeah.
want to just watch a food video. That's,
yeah.
that's been my goal with a lot of this. So
yeah. How did you go about sort of thinking of your brand and your content and like sort of what you wanted it to embody? I know you said, you know, I just make food videos to make people feel good. Like, was it like something you really sat down and thought through, or has it just sort of come naturally?
It comes naturally. I mean, when asked if I have a plan or anything like that, a 1-year plan, a 5-year plan, I've never had that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because I think so many different opportunities can come your way, especially in this space, right? I mean, I have no idea what I'll be doing a month from now in many ways. Like
yeah.
there could be this opportunity that pops up that I can't say no to. And it's this
yeah.
crazy new thing that, you know, I could never have really imagined. And I
yeah.
would go do that. But it could also just be me in my kitchen at home making a few cool videos and discovering some fun new recipe that ends up, you know, doing well online and a bunch of people make it. So it's all these different crazy paths that there can sort of be, which I think is really fun.
Yeah.
That was another thing that I didn't like about school. And also working in restaurants was that it was a lot of the same thing every day. And that was something that I just couldn't do. It
just
was
like
really hard for me.
The monotony of it all?
It was really, really hard for me.
Yeah.
And so that's why I like this, is because it is different every day. It's
yeah.
different every day.
How do you come up with like your ideas for videos and stuff like that?
I mean, there's so many different ways to do it. Of course, you can just go online, and that's why it is important for me to still keep up with what's going on social media.
Mm-hmm. Like culturally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. I mean, you have to know what's happening to a certain extent. And then travel is a great way.
Mm.
Eating at restaurants, traveling, you know, having a friend who's, I mean, I'm saying this because this happened, having a friend who is super familiar with like living in Chinatown in an area, taking me through restaurants and like seeing new food that I would never venture out and find, right?
Yeah.
Stuff like that, that just you branch out and see something new. And then, you know, that visit to Chinatown might spark something that I never ever would thought of that mm-hmm. maybe even is unrelated to that, but yeah. just something that I see where I'm like, you know what would be cool is if I did this with this, this. Kind of just getting out of the house.
I know. I feel like it, when you spoke earlier about just the like internal fearlessness that you kind of had as like a kid, and then now seeing how you've applied that to like your work and career, I think is like pretty awesome in terms of like just the spontaneity of like, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. And like, you know, just sort of trusting the universe, if you will, to just kind of like unfold as it's meant to. And like, I feel like it's such a good lesson for people to really take, like, as long as you're feeling good, as long as you're living a life of like honesty and integrity, you like, keep putting your best foot forward. And like, you don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's like, you just kind of have to like make the most of the present moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I like having that. For some people, I know they don't like that.
Yeah.
Which I totally respect.
Yeah. No, but I even those like, people who are like huge planners, it's like, there's still so much shit that's out of our control that like you could just all be disrupted like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to talk about food and mental health a little bit. I feel like they're so just closely connected in a way that we don't really talk about that much. You know, I think there's obviously pros and cons to it of like, you know, some foods that aren't the best for us that could be more of like a overeating or addicted to sugars or these things that almost sort of serve as a crutch. And then obviously there's like the food that, you know, can make us feel good and have our body running clean. Obviously such a big part of family and tradition is food, all these sorts of things. How do you think about that relationship?
Well, I was lucky with my mom is really into just the health side of things. And she always was very careful with reading all the labels and doing all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's funny because when we were kids, that wasn't such a big thing either. I mean, I remember for every birthday that we had, we would get this huge, it was a dragon cake that was just, I almost said caked with dye and food coloring. I mean, just full of food coloring.
Loaded,
like
yeah.
Dark, dark blue and then like bright red on and all this stuff, which we now know is just really not good, the fake artificial dyes. Mm-hmm. And so she always talks about that. That's the reference she likes to bring up of, hey, I wish I used to know how bad this was for you guys because you ate it every single birthday. So four birthdays a year and probably even more.
Yeah.
And
all the friends and cousins, yeah.
Right. So, but she was always really conscious of all that stuff, and which I think just made me and my brothers and my family as a whole care about it more.
Mm-hmm.
And also maybe stop before picking up something on the shelf that you just knew was bad or couldn't read half the ingredients in the label.
Yeah.
Because there's no secret at all. Like you said, that eating properly has such an incredibly large impact that most people, I think, don't even realize or think about on your health, on your life, on like mentally everything.
Right? Yeah.
But it's something also, ironically, as someone, you know, as a chef, I also struggle with that sometimes. Just if you're moving around fast, I mean, you know, people have talked about this a million times, but if things are busy, it can be harder to slow down and focus on that stuff.
Yeah.
So despite someone who has so much good food laying around,
yeah,
it's still hard for me.
Yeah. You find that cooking is like therapeutic for you in a way?
I don't want to say that it's turned into a job where I get home and don't really want to cook. But to an extent, that's sort of in some ways what's happened, right? Because I go, I show up every day to the studio, I film stuff and with food, cooking the whole time.
It's almost like not cooking feels more therapeutic for you then?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in a way, I just sort of want a break from it most of the time.
Yeah.
I like when I can go into the kitchen and it feels sort of fresh and new and therapeutic again.
Yeah.
And I can cook something simple, be creative. But most of the time, I just don't even want to touch a
pan. Is it hard? Like, it's hard to cook with the camera off just because you feel like you're like burnt out with it or what?
Yeah, sort of, in a way. Yeah. Just because, I mean, I get home and then I smell like, you know, frying oil and I want to go take a shower and I don't want to go downstairs again and smell. Because when I cook, I mean, I get into it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I get dirty. I get I got stuff on me. I'm like really, you know, I'm sauteing and there's like flames and oil splattering up at you, right? Yeah. Like I'm going to get that stuff all over me.
Yeah.
Not that you want to get messy, but yeah. just like it's going to be all over your arms and on your hands yeah, yeah. and I taste and this stuff. And so I don't want to have that around two of that once I get home and like yeah. get all clean. And
I kind of liken it to like a professional athlete almost. Of like, you know, when I hear some NBA players that I like, it'll be like the off season. They're like, I haven't like touched a basketball in 2 months. I'm like, what? Like,
yeah, yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, totally. A lot of time you just want to break and I wish I liked cooking as much as I used to, from a casual standpoint. But it just the reality is, if I'm doing it that much, it's hard to mm-hmm. it's hard to go home and want to do it again.
Mm-hmm. When did you know that you wanted to start sort of creating businesses and becoming an entrepreneur? I know you have your salt brand and. I'm sure there's other things in the works too. How have you thought about, you know, kind of building like the empire in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I always liked the business side of things too, and was very close to trying to go to business school, but I ended up deciding not to because I couldn't do it with all else that was going on, you know, now. But my sort of master plan growing up for a while was to go into the restaurant industry and then have that rigorous culinary training that would help me know what's going on with the food side of things in the mm-hmm. restaurant, and then also have the business side of everything where I could understand from a financial and just an overall business point of view what was going on with the restaurant
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, like the master class, yeah.
Yeah, which is not usually the case. It's usually a nice pairing of a chef and then an entrepreneur of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured I could merge that and just be that. It could be just me
yeah.
that tried to handle a lot of that stuff, but obviously that didn't, or has not happened at this point.
Do you want to like open a restaurant? Is that something that you think about?
I would look into it. Yeah. Down the yeah. road. I just don't have the time to focus on it right now. And it's a lot of work. I mean, I think even especially through the time of COVID, it exposed how difficult it is to work in the restaurant industry, which I think is great. Cause now I think hopefully more people will go into a restaurant and appreciate
respect. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you don't realize how hard people work in restaurants, but it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. It's tiring. It's just stressful. So it's a lot.
6+ days a week. Like,
yeah. I mean, one of my restaurant jobs, I almost just started crying during the service because it was just so, I was working the grill station at this restaurant and someone had ordered, I was doing a bunch of like nice steaks that night.
Mm-hmm.
The really nice big, it was one of those sort of large format plates mm-hmm. of steak, you know, so each one takes a while to prepare and you have to memorize everything in your head. So when the chef's calling out all the different orders, you have to know, okay, right now I have 2 steaks on the board and then I have, you know, 3 of the shrimp dish and this other stuff and you have to line it all up. And what happened was someone sent back one of their steaks, which was the first time that happened to me. And they said they want it cooked a bit more. And I pretty much to the chef was like, it's cooked medium rare. And he's like, I know, but I don't care. Just put it back on the grill.
Whatever. Yeah.
And that threw my whole rhythm off. I was already trying to keep up that night. I was struggling that night. I wanted to just like stop and
yeah.
And just... But of course I figured it out. I had to, but that was hard. And people don't have any idea. I mean, people go through that every single night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was one nice thing about COVID is it totally exposed how hard the restaurant world is. And of course, if I want to go into that, then I need the right people or the right time. And it's not something that I have right now. So
what was like one of the biggest lessons that actually working in a restaurant taught you, I feel like?
I mean, if anything, it just reinforced the idea of teamwork and just that I always liked to be on a team. Like I liked being on a team in sports growing up. I liked being on a team in the kitchen in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And when I was in the weeds at that time and couldn't keep up with the steak stuff, I'm sure someone popped over from a station next to me and helped me figure it out. And
yeah.
And otherwise things would have been awful that night, right? The food wouldn't have gotten out to the dining room. So
yeah.
I think that was the biggest thing was it was cool to see the application of a team in a different place. I hadn't seen it like that before. Mm-hmm. And it was just this idea that to get through the night, each night you needed everyone to help each other and also just be on their A game or things could kind of go south once in a while.
Yeah, I think, you know, you talking about a team sort of just makes me think of like a support system or something like that, which like we talk about all the time. It's like one of the most important pillars to anyone's like mental health, life, like whatever you want to call it. I'm curious now, like what does your team / support system like look like at now?
Yeah, I mean I'm lucky. I have a really great team. I've been doing this now for about 3.5 or 4 years or so. And so I've been fortunate that my team has grown over time.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have people around you that can start to think in the same ways that you're trying to think. And everyone has this sort of common goal, because it's hard to find, definitely hard to find good people to work with. There's no question about it. But I mean, I'm happier now with my team as a whole, as a big picture, more than ever, which is great. And I'm super happy to say that. It's weird because I started all this stuff just in my apartment kitchen by myself. And it's then
like alone.
It's just sort of quiet. And then my girlfriend's helping me as much as she can with like doing dishes at the end of the day. And like we'd literally both go out and do them together. I'd be offloading footage on the side while she was starting on the dishes and that kind of stuff. Like I had help.
Like you're wearing every single hat.
Even that was hard to do.
Yeah.
But that was such a small scale thing. And then it's now grown into sort of this thing where there's so many different people and from so many different areas. Like people always find this really cool. Even just one little section of what I do, I have a person that I can reach out to for any type of food. So if you tell me a food, whether it's even just if it's a more general term, produce, there's a name that pops into mind that I would text and just ask for this stuff, and I can get it shipped anywhere for whatever video we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I can get fresh cacao pods from Ecuador by tomorrow. There's crazy things like that. That's really cool. And it sounds funny you saying it even.
Yeah.
But, you know.
What was like the hardest thing to track down?
The hardest thing?
That you've had to get.
Japan has so much incredible food. I mean,
beef.
Honestly, they have most of the best of everything from what I've learned in the food space. They care so much about the food there. And
like the intention.
It's just incredible what they're able to create there. But of course, it's all the way across the world. So that's hard to get.
Yeah.
That's
what, like the best meat, the best fish, the best like
best
fruits,
fruit.
Like,
best everything, honestly. They have ridiculous methods that they use to grow or to get or create this stuff. And so, you know, if you asked me, is there one place you could source all your food from? If you could only pick one, it'd be Japan. It would be not hard to think about, because you'd be able to get this. I mean, everything. It's just, they care so much about it.
Yeah. Have you gone out there?
Yeah, I've been once. Yeah.
Nice.
The biggest thing I noticed, because people always ask, was the sushi really good? The biggest thing I noticed was actually not in the fish. The fish, of course, is perfect. It's high quality. It's amazing. But it's the rice and the amount of care that they put into making the perfect rice there, I thought was the
like,
most. That was
you would
the
think
most.
That that's like an afterthought, but it's like.
No, I mean, it was perfect.
When did you get the idea for the cookbook?
I actually wrote this really funny little, of course, it's very sort of silly to look at now, but this cookbook, quote unquote, when I was a kid. And it was just a compilation of all these recipes that I ripped off the internet and then put little notes on there, or things that I copied from my grandma. But it was my little reference go-to book in the kitchen. And then I think just eventually.
Do you still have it?
Yeah, we still have it. Yep.
Thick.
It's in a binder. It's in a green binder at my parents' house. I think restaurants, you know, even if I were to create a restaurant in Boston, only so many people can go in and check it out, right? And eat the food that's there. And then with the salt company, we can ship that out to a lot of different people. But at the end of the day, it's also just salt. And so when you talk about real food, a cookbook is the easiest way for me to get something out to as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just seems to make perfect sense, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes in the videos that we're making too, a lot of the time, actually, it's not replicable. You can watch it and it's very satisfying or it's fun, but you can't go and make it.
I'm not getting 10 types of Wagyu to my house. Yeah.
Well, for sure. Yeah. And it's fun for you to watch, because how often do you see like that beautiful marbled meat?
Yeah.
But, you know, I figured I should just sort of step back and focus on something that, you know, of course, there's no Wagyu in the cookbook. I'm not going to put that.
Yeah.
I don't even want to eat it anymore. It's just, it's beautiful for the videos. And I think everyone should try it once if they can and are interested.
Yeah.
Because it's a transformative experience. It's just crazy to think that it's even can be in the same category as meat. But of course, that's not in the cookbook, and there's nothing fancy in there. It's just a book that hopefully anywhere around the world, people can get the ingredients and make any of the recipes.
So you wanted it to feel very like accessible.
Definitely. I mean, that was the best way for me to reach as many people as I can with something that I've created for them to make. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most realistic way for me to let as many people as possible taste something that
experience
I had a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you go about thinking of the recipes, or like, is there sort of like an arc or a theme to the book, or when you really sat down, like how did you go about the nuts and bolts of it?
I mean, I could give you a reason for each recipe that I put in there, which I think is important, because I didn't want to just throw random stuff together. But but it's really just a super kind of global book. It has recipes from all over,
yeah,
or at least with inspiration from all over. And I just put a lot of my favorites in there. I really spent a lot of time thinking, you know, what could go in there. And there were a lot of recipes that got cut because I just sort of, you know, there was one that was better and I wanted to put all the best stuff that I could think of in there. So
you'll drop the deluxe and you'll have all the unreleased recipes.
I'll have a bonus version somewhere.
Does it sort of like have a beginner and it gets up more advanced, or is it all sort of the same level?
Oh, I'd say there's certainly.
I'm only asking because I'm a complete beginner.
That's fine. That's totally fine. Yeah. I think there's some that are definitely harder, or at least just have more components. I wouldn't even say some of them are too crazy difficult,
right?
Compared to others. I think it's more just, you know, there's a pork belly cow soy, which is amazing Thai. It's just, I mean, the flavors in it are unbelievable, and it's one of my favorite dishes that I order takeout from in Boston.
Yeah.
And I wanted to sort of replicate it and make my own version of it. And that one has a bunch of parts. I mean, you've got to treat the pork belly. You've got to cut it. You've got to make it crispy and fry it. And then that's done. And then you've got to take the noodles and you've got to cook them, boil them in one way and then fry them in another for the crispy. There's all these
different. Sounds intimidating.
Right? Yeah. And then there's this, not to mention like this broth that you have to make, this curry. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different parts to that. But it's just more time consuming than anything. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
So.
And when is it out again?
June 13th.
Amazing.
Just before Father's Day, actually. So nice. I think a lot of dads hopefully will get all pumped up about it too.
Oh yeah. Well, I have two more questions for you that we end every episode with. The first is, if you could nominate someone to come on the show who's been very inspirational or has had a big impact on your career, mental health, anything, whether you know them or not, who would it be?
I would say, I mean, it's a cliche answer maybe from me, but I would say you got to reach out to Gordon Ramsay.
Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, the reason I say that too is I think there's a side of him that most people don't get to know.
Mm.
And even I've only gotten to know a little bit of it.
Yeah.
But it's like this total sort of softy,
funny,
like very nice, funny guy.
Is he considered like the GOAT?
I mean,
like in the space?
Definitely. I mean, how could he not be?
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone ever says anything else, then, you know. They're crazy. I mean, of course, there's other names like Anthony Bourdain.
Of course.
I think Gordon is. I mean, he may very well be the most famous person in the food space to ever live. I think it's possible.
Have you gotten a chance to get to know him a little bit?
Yeah, and that's why I say I think it'd be nice for people to see the side of him that most people don't know.
Yeah.
Because the first question I think I get, the most commonly asked question I think I get is, what's he like, or is he actually nice? And then I'm like, and I get it. It's a valid question, right?
For sure.
You don't really see much on TV other than just the very intense.
That side of his personality. Of yeah.
Yeah. But he's got a totally different side to him that I think is super cool.
Yeah. So, what's something that he's taught you?
I think what I respect about him is just how great of a job he's done at doing so many different things.
Mm.
One thing that I would say is, you know, he's got a really wide range of what he does. He's in the restaurant space. He's in the TV space. He's got a bunch of CPG products. He's got a liquor brand. It's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of
stuff. And I don't even think I would want to dive into that many different things.
Yeah.
But it's just very impressive that he's been able to. It goes down to the word of team again, where he's been able to build out this team that's clearly the mm-hmm. best at what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been very much watching that over the years and just sort of seeing everything they do and taking notes because they're the best at what they do.
Yeah, you know? For sure. Lastly, Nick, what makes you mad happy?
Food.
There it is.
Keep it easy.
Well, thanks for coming on, brother. We're super excited for the book, and we can't wait. Appreciate the conversation.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Peace.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Mad Happy Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another episode, so please stay tuned. If you're not subscribed to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, please do so. It means a lot. Have a fantastic end of the week and weekend, and we will see you next time.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.